The phrase immigration reform has been used by people of all political stripes for decades, and it can mean many different things. Both the right and the left may believe in the essential concept, but that's where the agreement ends. Recent images from the U.S.-Mexico border have increased the tension, and the 4 years of the Trump administration were heavy on rhetoric. The new book, Immigration Matters, Movements, Visions, and Strategies for a Progressive Future, offers ideas for how true immigration reform could happen. I spoke with one of the book's editors, Deepak Bhargava, and we began by talking about whether comprehensive immigration reform is still a relevant term to use.
Well, I think the idea of comprehensive immigration reform is still alive. It's the idea that we need a total rewrite of our nation's immigration framework, that it is a relic of another era. The thing that's changed is that it was founded on the idea that we needed to trade off harsh, tough enforcement at the border and in the interior for a path to citizenship legalization for undocumented people in the United States. What's happened is we've gotten the harsh enforcement, we've gotten billions at the border, but we have not gotten legalization for the undocumented. So that's the sense in which the deal has broken. One side got their part of the deal, the other side didn't.
Has the immigrant or the migrant worker or whatnot been renewed as some sort of boogeyman? Has that always been the case, but certain years it is more than others, and this is one of those worst times?
Well, it's interesting. In history, the country goes through waves of pro-immigrant and nativist sentiment. And Donald Trump, as president, capitalized on that nativist impulse that runs really deep in our culture. The interesting thing, however, is that the unexpected effect of his presidency was a boomerang. So public opinion after he left office was more supportive of more immigration than it has been at any time in the last 50 years. So it seems like we actually may be in a period where we're turning from a nativist orientation to a more pro-migrant orientation. It may take a while for that to bear out in policy, but I think the signs are there. The whole debate we had about essential workers, who they were, our reliance on farm workers that happened during the pandemic. I think we're at the beginning of a sea change again in American history.
The book we're talking about, Immigration Matters, is broken down into four parts. And Deepak, one of those is lessons of organizing campaigns. And one of the chapters talks about the Nevada turnaround, immigrant workers build political power. We've also seen this in Arizona in Get Out the Vote efforts. At the grassroots level, how much are those sort of campaigns key to turning around the narrative and also somehow changing immigration policy in a way that is beneficial?
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. You know, demographic change does not inevitably lead to political change or policy change, but it's a huge asset for those of us who think the country should become more pro-immigrant over time. So Nevada is a fascinating case study because Harry Reid ended his career as probably the most pro-immigrant senator in the United States Senate. 20 years before that, he was a stone-cold nativist who was opposed to immigration. What happened in the interim, partly I'm sure he had a change of heart, but also there was intense political mobilization and union mobilization by the hotel workers union. And that story of political and social mobilization in immigrant communities has been the story in California, in Nevada, in Arizona. It's actually a piece of the story of what happened in Georgia, and it will increasingly be a part of the story of what happens throughout the South in the next decades. So that's part of the reason I'm optimistic that the nativist fever will break. It's because there is a formula for translating this demographic strength into changes in policy. And that formula involves political mobilization of not just immigrants, but their Latino, Asian American, other communities that are deeply enmeshed with immigrants. And that's a very formidable base of power in these parts of the country.
And earlier you brought up the phrase essential workers, which of course is something that has come up a lot more during the pandemic. Can I ask you for your general thoughts about how the pandemic then, in a broader sense, may have affected perception of immigrants or changing immigration policy here?
Yeah, it's, you know, a fascinating story. I think what the pandemic did is it made us look again at what work and whose work we really value in society. So the work of caring for the ill, caring for the elderly, all of the food service work that is so terribly paid in our society, it suddenly flashed into view just how central that is to our well-being. And I think in communities around the country, people began to look at the people who were doing that essential work in a different way, and they began to notice who they were. And they're very substantially of color. Many are African-American, and many, many are immigrants. And so I think it has created a different lens through which to have this conversation, that it's not just about being good to immigrants, that it's actually part of our national strategy, our national well-being, our health depends upon full inclusion of immigrants in our society, in our economy. And I think that is going to be a cultural breakthrough that has a very long tail.
Deepak, let's close with the chapter that you wrote, the Statue of Liberty Plan. What are the most important components of the Statue of Liberty Plan?
The argument I make is that in this century, for both moral reasons, humanitarian reasons, and economic reasons, one of the single most important policy frameworks we could adopt is to admit millions more people to the United States in the coming years. So we think of the United States as the most generous country in the world to immigrants. In fact, it isn't. Australia, Canada, Switzerland have significantly higher proportions of their population that are immigrant. We have a lot of room to grow in this country. And because of the demographic shifts of an aging population, we need to grow. We need to admit more people to do the work that's going to support retirees, fill essential jobs. And then the other driver here is climate change. So we are seeing a refugee crisis in the Western Hemisphere. It's only going to get worse. A lot of the migration driven from Central America over the last few years has been due to hurricanes, crop failures, floods, and so forth. That's going to escalate. And so those countries, largely in the global south, did not cause, for the most part, climate change. They're minor contributors. We did in the global north. So there's a moral obligation to welcome many more people. So both on economic and self-interest grounds, and on the grounds of doing the right thing, there's a huge imperative for this country to open its doors again, as it has in the past. And I argue it might actually be the way out of our national impasse, of our political impasse. It might be the key to renewing our civic culture in a way that could have benefits for everybody.
That is Deepak Bhargava. He is co-editor of the book Immigration Matters, Movements, Visions, and Strategies for a Progressive Future. Deepak, thanks for the conversation. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. Have a wonderful day. Great to talk to you.